Hello, everyone, and welcome to Attack of Opportunity, the show where we are now interviewing. Well, first of all, it's a brand new year, 2020. It's our first show of the year, and it is my distinct pleasure to interview a double threat, someone that is doing multiple things, creating multiple content on the internet. And I would like to thank and welcome Mr. Weston from Arcane Anthems. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
I am super stoked to be here, Jeff. I was really excited when you reached out to me. I was I love talking to people in the community. It's literally one of the reasons that I started doing this, is that connecting with people is something I'm super passionate about. So I really appreciate it.
I did get that vibe. Like, I found you on Twitter, my usual fishing grounds for trying to find unique content creators, or, you know, anyone that'll give me the time of day. you're messaging the passion that was not just in your work and some of your icons and art and everything, that and music and everything that drew me to, like, oh, this looks interesting. You know, who is this person? The fact that you immediately responded at 2 a.m. for me. It's like, I finished editing late and it's 2 a.m. for me. Luckily, it was only like 11 o'clock on the other coast.
Not so bad for me, but
East meets West Coast. So the very first question that we love to ask all of our victims here on Attack of Opportunity is, how did you first know that you were a geek, a nerd, one of us?
I think it started when I was a little kid and I played with Legos a lot, but I didn't just like build things. I always had to have like the same sets. So I had this set of Legos that were these kind of underwater Legos, and they're kind of like a future tech. And I basically built up all the rules to that world without knowing like what world building was. I was like, here's the currency and they're these little pieces, and here's how much these little parts cost, and this is how much damage that these little blasters will do. And I'm busy like building up ships and like bases and all these things. I invite my friends over and we'd like play in this world together that I had created with this undersea society. I didn't know that I was making Fallout underwater.
BioShock?
BioShock. I love BioShock. You can tell by my logo how much I love BioShock. the font.
Oh, yeah, let me get that one up there. There you go.
Oh yeah,
got one of them up.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
But that's not how I knew. But looking back, that's how I knew that I was.
Yeah. Sorry, now my head's filled with watching my wife play BioShock.
Oh, such a good game.
No. Well, let's talk about, you know, so there you are playing with Lego. How old were you?
Probably like seven, eight.
Right.
Maybe
so,
nine.
You know, most 7-year-olds, you know, are interested. They do what they do. Later on, maybe before BioShock and after Lego Underwater World, was there a defining moment for you, a gateway drug, like a video game, cosplay, card game, TV, movie, sci-fi, you know, something that brought you into the RPG world?
Actually, I don't think that really happened as far like tabletop RPGs. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, or like even like a video game RPG, like, you know, there's...
Oh, I played Zelda Ocarina of Time probably like 8 times through. I think that fantasy vibe that it had just really sucked me in. And honestly, listening back, it was that opening screen, the music on that opening screen, I would just let play. And I think that makes sense as to why I'm doing what I'm doing now with compositions, is I can still hear that opening music from Ocarina of Time in like playing over and over again. And by just letting it play, there's just this connection that kind of came over to me. And I think that was the moment that I knew that I absolutely loved that style, that role-playing element, that immersion element. I wanted to be in that world. And I think it was, makes sense, a lot of the music that really pulled me in and made me want to be there.
I totally get that. My wife was playing on the old Xbox. I mean, like the old one that had the big flappy controller, that the vibrating unit that you plug in the bottom. She was playing one of the old Castlevanias, and I'm watching her play this, and there was this NPC, and he was like this British sports coat demon with a little tail and little glasses, and he's always like, we need more gold. So if you brought him gold, you know, he'd sell you stuff. And then she'd go to a pause screen, and it was like this young boy of a Dracula playing the violin reminiscing, like the way Sherlock, they always have the Sherlock character looking out the window of Baker Street, and the music was just, it was sublime, subtle, and so epic. And to this day, I remember, you know, like stopping, listening to this, going, this is cool that they've put this in a video game, you know, because up until that point, before they really developed RPGs, it was endless dun 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 da 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 da, and yeah. Smack the turtle da da da, and it's like, oh, I'm bleeding out my ears. So no, I totally relate to that. But next question for you, sir. So there you are talking about Ocarina of Time. How long have you been a gamer?
My entire life. I mean, I was playing games. I'm 33. I'm not super young, not super old. I'm kind of what is that? I said that I was I'm an old young guy is what I am.
An elder millennial, as yeah, some comedians I'm say,
an,
right?
I'm an elder millennial, and I like that. And
you like
I,
that?
I started playing games. I mean, on the Nintendo, that was my first console that I owned, and then I had Game Boy and all those things. So I played, I think I distinctly remember playing like Ninja Turtles on there, like that famously super hard game, the blasted level when you're underneath the dam and in the water and you're trying to swim through all the seaweed. Oh, just the worst, but so much fun. that's how I knew, like, that's kind of where my video game journey started. You know, I had Super Nintendo and Nintendo 64 and PlayStation and GameCube and Wii, and I just recently got a Switch and am playing through, you know, all my fun. I think
the new Zelda title on Switch.
Yes.
Watch the wife go through that one.
Very, very good game. But I there was another time when I was in seventh grade over the summer, my friends and I, literally all we did the entire summer, and this is like eight of us, we would play Smash Brothers on the 64. And we would play Pokemon cards. And that's what we did for like 4 to 5 weeks every single day. And it was awesome. And I still remember that. We would just go back and forth. We would play some Smash Brothers. Then we'd go play some Pokemon. Then we'd play some Smash for like 7 hours every single day.
And was this in the proverbial mom's base? We're like, what are you boys doing down there? You should go outside and get some sun.
It was at a bunch of different houses. We'd pop around to not annoy the families too much.
That's what you do, right? You're like, okay, mom, we're going outside. You go to Bob's house, right? Okay. Hey, my friends are over for a while, and you get 6 hours out of that basement, right? And then you move on.
it was neat because, like, we'd ride our bikes around to, like, different houses. We'd ride our bikes to go get lunch. We'd ride our bikes. And then it was a great summer. What a fun summer for a
Have you seen the new RPG called Kids on Bikes, which is, they claim it's not a Stranger Things ripoff. It's totally a Stranger Things ripoff. Somewhere between like the Scooby-Doo world and Kids on Bikes that can, you know, solve problems.
Oh, that's hilarious. I feel like I've heard that name, but I haven't actually seen the content yet.
Well, speaking of content, when did you make the transition to the actual, you know, like D20, the classic tabletop RPGs?
I think for me, it wasn't, I think. I was in a rock band for 10 years, and this is going to make sense in a second. So I wasn't super involved in like all the nerd culture stuff that I find myself in today. I was very much involved in the music world, which is very like cool. And at least at the time it was, you know, trying to look cool, trying to be cool, whatever that meant. And it wasn't until I kind of stepped away from that. And one of my good buddies, my keyboard player, actually, he started getting into board games. And like the kind of board game renaissance that we're doing now. And I started from that getting into board games, getting into more like heavy board games. We played like Small World. We played, what was the other one? Pandemic. Like these kind of, since then, we've now played Gloomhaven. But
I know.
It kind of transitioned until one point I was on Imgur, which is like an image hosting site. And I saw a post saying that somebody was talking about this group of people that was, you know, voice actors that were playing Dungeons and Dragons. And I was like, that is the nerdiest thing I've ever heard. And I skipped past it. And I was like, actually, voice acting is kind of interesting. I'm going to give this a shot. And I clicked on it. And for the next, I don't even know, 3 months, I was listening to Critical Role, like at the very, very beginning when they first started. And I know Critical Role can be kind of a divisive thing, but that's the reason that I'm playing Dungeons and Dragons. Is that I saw that, and then I convinced 8 of my friends to start playing D&D because of it. And I had to start playing as a DM because there was nobody else to DM.
Anybody that micromanages their Lego, I think would make a great DM, so don't worry about it.
And to this day, we're still playing that same campaign 4 years later. So, yeah. it's really exciting stuff. I now do anthems. I have a podcast. I've invited multiple people to play Dungeons and Dragons because of that influence.
Since we're on that thread, let me throw up a Knights of the Rolled Table logo I got popping up here. And we'll get back to Arcane Anthems and you personally, but since we really hit the sort of like the D&D marker, let's talk about the podcast first. So 4 years of campaigning, right? Critical Role got you just playing D&D. What got you podcasting? And, you know, was there an influence for that?
So at least in the first campaign, all my friends always wanted to do a podcast. And I was like, well, then I would be in charge of, you know, they're like, oh, that's one more thing for me to do. But eventually, one of the players that I invited to play with us, who was a work buddy of mine, he is involved with a improv group here in San Diego called National Comedy Theater. And he started playing after we started playing with him, with those people through text. And then he invited me to play with them through text. And then it was actually that group, the National Comedy Theater group, that we all started this idea of this podcast. And they all are a little bit more techie. So it was able to take off a lot of the stress that I would be under. They also DM. They also have tons of, they're hilarious. They have a lot of improv skills. So that became the group that was much easier to do a podcast with. So we started playing in text, and then we started playing in person, and then we decided, yeah, like, Weston's got this audio gear. He knows how to run audio. Let's do this. And we did.
And Knights of the Rolled Table. Like, get it? Knights of the Round Table, King Arthur? Knights of the Rolled Table? I'm assuming that's where you're going. I saw what you did there.
That's right.
That's good. That's good.
So we set out to create a podcast that anybody could listen to. There's a lot of amazing podcasts out there that are, you know, they use a lot of adult language. Most of us in the podcast actually have kids. So we wanted to create a podcast that was adult, but that you could listen in the car with your kids and not have to worry about it. Or listen in the car with your grandma and not have to worry about it.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's good. So we're talking about Knights of the Rolled Table now. And what actually, like, what is the game that you guys play?
We play Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition.
Okay.
And is it play.
And is it homebrew?
It is homebrew.
Material?
Yeah, okay. It's definitely homebrew. We take turns DMing. We're a little bit different in that we don't hang on to characters as long as a lot of other podcasts do. Season one, we had a group of characters. And then in season two, only two of those characters moved to the next season. And then we had like three or four new characters. We also have people who guest star and come on and play their own characters. So we have a very fluid cast. And that's very different. That's not something that a lot of podcasts do. But because... Oh. All of
guest players, you say?
Yes. Hmm. Yes, we do.
Sorry. Please continue. Make a note of that.
We bring in people, and because they're all improv people, they like the idea of constantly creating new characters, but bringing them back later. You know, it's not that we just like throw them to the side and they're done. We don't just tell one story. This is a continuing story following different characters inside of this world. And then we each take turns DMing, but again, we're still inside the same world. So whatever happened in season one affects season two. Season two is going to affect season three with items, with, you know, interactions, with whatever it may be. So we found it to be a very living, breathing world in that way when we aren't just playing a single character.
Oh, that's cool. Now, do you personally, because now you said you don't always just DM. What's your secret? Because like, now we have new GMs coming on to our shows, and I've got four lined up, and we're going to do a bunch of one shots. And if they do well, they will become shows. But right now, I'm DMing like three or four different games for this, and you get to play. I envy you. Do you have a favorite class, race, or alignment that you personally like to play when you get to play?
Absolutely. I think in my app, I have nine different characters that I have between different text campaigns and things. I think my favorite so far, my favorite race is Aarakocra. I love Aarakocra, and it has nothing to do with their flying ability. I actually have an Aarakocra warlock who gave up his flight to get his magic.
What is that? Can you, for the non-completely nerd?
Aarakocra are a race of kind of bird-like creatures they got feathers, and they have arms, they have wings. I don't know what it is about them. I think I just like their look, and I think I love the art that comes out with them. I mean, I've seen like parrots, parrot-style humanoids. I've seen hawk-style humanoids. I've seen crows. I've seen, and a lot of people relate that bird entity to like the Kenku, which is like the the speechless bird that just imitates sounds. I'm not talking about Kenku. I'm talking about Aarakocra. So they're kind of this flying bird race in the world. And when I, one of the funny things about the podcast is I'm always introducing these new races, and everyone's like, "What are you? What are you talking about, Weston?"
Imagine a boyd, but it's a man, but it's a boyd. Yeah.
So I've had a lot of fun. Class, I love Battlemaster fighters because they have all these cool maneuvers. And if you throw in the luck feat, then you can really annoy your DM like mad. And I love it. I just love having a character that is very complex. So I really like these. I like the fighter characters that just kind of hit hard. But then I also like this idea of these maneuvers where you can trip them or disarm them or attack them a little bit longer range. There's a lot of a lot of things that you're able to do with that class. It's not just, I swing my sword.
Cool. So before we get to the final several questions that will, I don't want to end the show prematurely. I want to put a pin in that for a minute and dial it back. Let's talk about you personally, Weston, and the creation of Arcane Anthems. And one of the things that drew me to you finding on Twitter is the awesome treble clef. Very simple, classic black and white treble clef, which is cradling a D20. And it's very subtle. It's not easy to see. And I thought that was very clever. It was one of the reasons why I clicked on you. But what got you into, you know, because a lot of people just podcast and that's it. They use other people's music and everything. You said, the guy said, you know, Weston knows he has all that stuff in his living room. What came first, the podcast or the anthem? You know, the music composition that you've got up?
I've been composing RPG music for about 2 years, and okay. I have a rock music background. I do not have a classical background at all, but orchestral music was something that always connected with me. Like I said, going back to, you know, Zelda Ocarina of Time, that really connected with me. So I wanted to start making music like that, and I first started by composing a piano piece for a member of my original party, one of my players. And then I thought, why don't I do this for all of my players? So then I did it for each one of my players. And then I thought, I wonder if people would want me to write anthems for them. And that kind of evolved. And people started, I went on, you know, Instagram. People were like, you're doing what? That sounds amazing. So they start commissioning me to write anthems. And now, a couple of years later, I want everyone to have the opportunity to have music in their campaigns.
And now you say anthem, or people are hitting you up going, are you offering personal character theme music? Is that how they're coming at you with this?
Yeah. When I first started, that's exactly what I was doing. And I still do those types of compositions because I love that the connection that it creates between somebody who is has this amazing character fleshed out, and then I can internalize that character. And then we go back and forth on the actual creation of this, of the music itself. I mean, music connects us to media. You know, even unbiased opinions, what makes you cry in movies is the music. It's what makes you connect to music, to any form of media. And I feel like everybody should have access to music, and that's why I started Arcane Anthems, with the idea that I can be the community bard, and I can set this music out there for free for everybody to use, whether they're doing a podcast, whether they're doing an actual play, stream, if they have their home campaigns, they can use it without having to worry that I'm going to take legal action against them. They don't have to wait for me to respond to get permission from me. I'm giving that permission out. The only thing I ask is that they then point their audience back to me, that they credit me with the anthem they're using, and that more and more people find out about this.
I happen to have queued up a little bit of music now. You won't be able to hear it yourself, but I know through my computer it's going to sound a bit washed, but you do have to type in Arcane Anthems and go to Weston's Patreon, where he has samples of the music, 3-minute bits and stuff. You don't necessarily have to be a Patreon member to enjoy Weston's music, but this is where you can find a bunch of it. And I just want to roll through a couple of little, just give everyone a little taste here. This one's here is called Find the Path. Also the name of one of my favorite podcasts that are technically competition, because they're also doing Pathfinder's Mummy's Mask, but Rick and his crew are great. I've spoken with him before, and I totally support what they're doing. And I saw Find the Path, and I listened to it first because it's like, oh, did he, you know, was he inspired by them?
Yeah.
Now, that's just 20 seconds, but and I am immediately launched into somewhere between Carmen Sandiego, Pink Panther, and not necessarily like a noir gumshoe, but I could also see like slinking in an alley or even like a rabbit trail nature. Like there's so many places that, like you were saying, that music can take you. Or I just have an overactive imagination.
I love it.
another one I want to play really quickly is a couple moments of a revised anthem called Brave. Now, can you tell me why this one's revised?
So I recently, due to the support I've been getting, I've been able to buy some new instruments, essentially, like software instruments, better sounding violins, better sounding, trumpets and flutes and pianos and those types of things. And because of that support, I'm now going back through and I'm updating a bunch of my older music to sound even better.
Oh, I
see.
Okay.
More realistic.
All right. Well, let's give a quick listen.
Yeah.
I like this piece for two reasons. First of all, I am a keyboard man myself, played a little bit of Genesis and Rush back in the day in a cover band, and I learned on my grandfather's old organ, which made keyboards and synthesizers multi-leveled in 80s my jam, and even the classic piano that builds. I love epic music that slowly builds. You add an element every 5 seconds, you add an element, and I gotta say, that, man, you've got that down, because there is that over-looming coming from behind the piano depth that, you're adding more and more. Anyway, I'm not going to spoil, all of your titles okay. Maybe just one more. Maybe just one more. Am I reading this? The Spirit of Bryn?
Yeah, that's a brand new one. That was actually created with a winner of a giveaway that I did on Instagram.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
really
no, fun. You know what? No, it's a tease. Nope. They're going to have to go to your website. Now.
All right.
They're going to have to look into you. Just type in Arcane Anthems and follow links and you'll find his music. Sorry. He is giving it away for free, but you get the idea.
We're
going to spoon feed you this stuff, people. Like, the idea of this interview is so that you become curious about Weston and his work and see what his passion in music for music can do for you and your campaign. So, getting back to the questions, at hand, you said you've been, creating content for 2 years in Anthem. How long have you been podcasting?
We've been doing that for about a year. And
Okay. We
hit our, we have about a total of 8,000 listens now, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. We have two seasons. We're wrapping up season two right now. And, intermingled in there, we have some fun one-shots. We did a holiday one-shot that was just a couple episodes. It was a lot of fun. It was really silly and great. That also is canon and exists in the realms world that we've created.
Oh, hey, man, tell me about our Star Wars. Sorry to interject, but it is Attack of Opportunity. I do try to jump on things.
Do it.
Season 2, Episode 4 of We Shot First, where we're running Star Wars Saga Edition, the Dawn of Defiance campaign, to show everyone, like Rogue One, that old Star Wars is still fun. You don't have to hate Star Wars right now. Set 3 months after Order 66, and they're running around working for Bail Organa, doing his dirty work and wet work, all Black Ops. The Rebellion doesn't even exist yet.
Sounds amazing.
And right in the middle of it, they decide to go to some off-world and buy a ship, and I separated their Jedi and made them do all these Force visions and stuff, and I totally ripped off Bill Murray Scrooged, which is a parody of the original Christmas Carol.
That's amazing.
And it's one of our most popular episodes, as I have this character thinks he sees the other players, and they act like the original characters. Like, one of my favorites is the Ghost of Christmas Present, played by Carol Kane, because Present is, a violent, dark time, in like 1980, 1990. This little fairy, beats him up while she's talking to him, starts, look at this present, it's a toaster, and she decks him with it and all this stuff. So I had their combatant character, beat on the Jedi while he was trying to say, what's with this name, Poser Sham? That's not the real you, and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, there's a lot there. We're digging into the Jedi's guilt that leads to fear, that leads to, type of thing. And how he's this character is toss the robes because it's the dark time in the rebellion. You know, they're hunting Jedi. He got rid of the robes and lightsaber, and he's glammed himself up like some kind of emo rocker, and he's all walking around and got his guitar and everything. You know, perhaps we can do something where get you to compose some music, some theme music, because there's this running joke where in a battle he acts like a bard. He'll play his guitar and do theme music for the characters. Anyway, but
you should listen to my track "I Bite" and see if there's anything there that might resonate with our rocker.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Send me the links for that.
I definitely will. I'm hoping that, you know, eventually, right now there's probably about 20 songs on the site, and I want that to be in the hundreds. You know, I want that to be just a massive library that people can go to and find. And this, I love this one. I'm going to use it because I can, because he said I can. Mm-hmm. And that's my dream. That's my dream. I can do that full time.
And you're not the only one. You and I are both, we both know Tabletop Audio, and I use them all my work. And his stuff is all free. And if you want to show him some love and realize how epic the guy's music is, Tim's music is, that, you know, you hit him up on Patreon. I'm not dishing Sirenscape. Sirenscape is awesome. And they're in bed with Paizo now, and they have some amazing things. But, you know, a lot of podcasts and starting out, they don't have the budget for yet another subscription after paying hosts and things. I know we didn't and still don't really. I have a soft spot for Tim at Tabletop because he was actually kind enough to come on the show, and we interviewed him with one of my first interviews. And I was just so thrilled that this New Yorker would give me the time of day and talk about his journey, the same as you're talking about yours. You got playing, you got writing, then you mix them. And it's like, why not? Why not write stuff, not just for yourself and your 9-year-old and the guys, but put it up there and, you know, let people, you know, share in your passion. I mean, that's why we're here.
Exactly.
That's why we're doing this. I mean, yeah, Patreon is wonderful. Thank you. Please send, you know, subscribe, follow to help us pay the bills for this. But my wife asked me when things were getting really hectic. She said, if we won the lottery, would you still be doing this? I'd be like, yes, I'd be doing more of it.
Even more,
you know?
So, yeah.
I would do it even more. But anyway, you were talking about doing a holiday special. Which, again, sorry, set me off. I think it's awesome.
I was actually going to comment on, I love the fact, I feel like Sirenscape has some of the best like background sounds and ambient like noises. And mm-hmm. I feel like Tabletop Audio has these really great ambient soundscapey kind of long droning in a good way, where he's able to create these atmospheres super well. And my mission is a little bit different than theirs. Where I am trying to create the boss music, you know, like,
No, I got you. Yeah.
And I love that. I believe that there is room, you know, for all of these people and for even more composers to come out to write their own music, to support the RPG community in whatever way that, you know, they deem, you know, that they can. I'm not saying that every artist has to give away their music for free. That's not the case. That's just what I've chosen to do. And what I'm hoping to become one of our community bards is really my goal.
Well, honestly, man, from what I've seen, like, you are definitely well on your way. So let's talk about a couple other pertinent questions that I want to get out of the way. You mentioned Critical Role very early, and you'd be surprised how many people, they always tag it, but they don't say, oh, that was my personal inspiration. You're one of the first people actually that said, I saw this show and I convinced my friends. You think that would happen a lot. You're actually one of the first people I've interviewed that said that. Usually a lot of people have something very personal. It is similar, you know, they see something, or they're doing something, or they've discovered something, whether it's, you know, Legos in the basement or whatever. And I'm always curious, that's why I always put that question in there. When you got creating music, and you talked about, you know, why you're doing it, and you guys talk about Knights of the World Table and how you love doing it. I'd like to ask a couple personal questions,
sure.
Starting with, where do you create your content from? Where does magic happen? Your house. Where's
my living room. I have a bit of a setup. If you follow any of my Instagram, you know, anything, you'll see me. It's literally in my living room. It's amongst the chaos. It's with my kids running around as best I can. My wife is amazing and super supportive and tries to give me that time to create. I put my headphones on and I kind of get in the zone, and I'm able to create in that way. And sometimes sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's hard with, you know, everything that's happening. Or I'll do it at night, but I have my little workstation, my battle station set up, with my headphones and my speakers and my computer and my keyboard next to me, kind of.
No, we mentioned you were on the West Coast. Whereabouts
I'm
you
in San
from?
Diego.
You're in San Diego. From San Diego.
San Diego, California.
He's representing the composers of San Diego. There you go. Well, no, we're not looking for a street address, you know, so that people can, like, look at you from your front lawn. No, I was just curious about whereabouts you're from. Sorry. Just got a picture of your wife, you know, like calming your kid going, no, honey, they're for daddy. They're not here for you. They didn't come for us. We're going to slip out the back. Does that mean, like, when you guys do the podcast, like you're talking about composing in your living room, when you do your podcast, does the gang come to your house?
So luckily, I was able to get like a Zoom recorder. And I have 6 different inputs on that bad boy. So I don't have to bring a computer with me or anything. We have 6 different microphones, cables, you know, pop filters, all that stuff. And we can set up wherever we want. So sometimes we'll do it at a studio that one of my friend's parents owns. Sometimes we'll do it in one of our homes. But because our studio is so mobile, we're able to just schedule around our schedules, not around somebody else's schedule as well, which means that we get to get together a lot more often. And we get to make that content more often as well.
That's cool. So what else I'd like to ask you here is, what about your favorites? You talked about Critical Role. Do you have any other favorite, like, do you have another favorite composer that possibly inspires you? Do you have, you know, favorite movies that inspire your work? Do you and the gang have a favorite other podcast that you listen to? Though, you know, the one of the sort of, besides Critical Role, is like, oh, one day we will be them. You know, that kind of thing. Is there a list?
That's a really great question. Because I feel very new to the world of composing, I haven't really delved very deeply into specific artists or people that I want to be like. But there are plenty of movies, there are plenty of, you know, soundtracks that have been so iconic. I mean, as soon as you hear that, those like loud trumpets, you know that you're listening. You're watching Inception. As soon as you hear the march, you know that Darth Vader's coming on screen. There's just these moments.
I gotcha.
Theme is something that is always playing in my head because it's so amazing and long. It's a very drawn out melody, and it works. And it's just the catchiest thing ever. And those are the types of things I want to be making for people's campaigns.
That's awesome. And you know what? Don't check out the competition. It'll ruin you. Because the worst thing you can do is start comparing yourself to others. Focus on your work, what makes you happy. I've been told this because inspiration for someone like myself works both ways. When a fan reaches out and says, hey, I watched this. I think it's pretty good. I was like, oh, really? You know, that kind of thing. It really lifts you and keep you going through the drudge of the technical and the drudge of the, you know, are we doing this right? Or, you know, am I good enough? Is my style good enough? You know, are we going to get anywhere? You start looking at numbers and things, and they can be depressing as well as they can be uplifting. You could look at views and things and go, wow, look at this. You know, this show's doing really well. This one isn't. But it's the same people playing. What, you know, what's going on? And you get into that business aspect of it, of the creating that the audience really don't know about. And it can be very depressing for myself. And it's no secret. A group of podcasters that started about a year before myself in New York, the Glass Cannon Podcast, are a bunch of guys in their late 30s. And they joke. They reference the movies. They reference the music. They have a certain chemistry. Yes, there are voice actors and technical experts, gurus, and former actors hidden. You know, they don't come out going, hey, we're a bunch of voice actors and we're 20-something and pretty and wearing our logos and, you know, but we're hanging out and having a good time like any other nerd. You know, it's like, that's an illusion, right? These guys are very down to earth. They're not ashamed of any swear word or any opinion that they have, but they don't push them on you.
Right on.
And I found that very endearing. And when I was trying to get my own content going, I latched on to Glass Cannon Podcast and a couple others, people I've met, guys like Michael Kasevin, Guy Scalanders, David Fryant, you know, all people that do this and are making a good go of it and are not necessarily world famous, but are doing well enough that, you know, their content, they're at a point where it's paying for itself. And that's the best you can hope for, is not being hugely famous. It's just that you have enough people appreciating and throwing you a dime in the time of day that you're not blowing all your, you know, you're not spending grocery money and stuff on new microphones and stuff. The fans want more. They appreciate quality. They appreciate your content, and they are helping, not for you, but helping you retire. No, I mean, you know, paying for stuff and cost stuff. Cause there are, the more you delve into it, the more costs there are. And if you can latch onto somebody like that for me, that inspired you, that kept you going, you know, in a dark time, great. But it is, I'm saying, a double-edged sword, sir. And you can look at a bunch of people and go, wow, you know, we just don't have that. We'll never be that. Or you look at someone else and you start judging other people and yourself, and it becomes toxic.
That's the bane of all creatives, I feel, is that your work is never good enough for you. You know, we struggle to see the good in what we're creating. But because we're creative, we can see the amazing things that other people are creating.
And it can be depressing and inspiring all at the same time.
there's something about knowing how you created something that makes it less magical. And as a creative, when you see yourself creating, but you don't see other creators creating so much. And so when you see other creators creating, it takes away some of the glamour behind it. And you say, actually, I think I can do that. I think I can pull that off. And not to say there aren't complete geniuses out there who have spent, you know, time and time and time perfecting their art. And they definitely have. But I think that's one of the reasons that creatives get down on ourselves so much, is because we compare our growing selves to a finished product of somebody else. And that's a shame, because one thing, I followed this guy. Have you heard of Wintergatan?
I don't think so.
That's okay. He's creating this. You may have even seen the video. He works on this thing called the Marvel Machine, and this Marvel Machine is essentially like an autonomous creation of his that drops marbles onto a vibraphone and a bass and percussion. And he's creating this brand new one. He created one, made a video of it, and now it's that first one's already fallen apart. He's creating one for a tour, so it's going to be amazing. He recently said, what did he say? He said, it's great when you're the stupidest person in the room, because it's then that you know you're learning. And he has had to learn all sorts of things. He's an amazing musician, but he's had to become an engineer to build this contraption that he's building. And so when I am feeling down on myself that I am not Hans Zimmer, or that I'm not, sometimes I feel like a fraud, I think of that. And I say, right now you're feeling like the stupidest person in the room. And that's because you're learning and you're growing. And I often tell people, when you start working out, when you start, you know, going to the gym, it feels, you feel your weakness, but that doesn't mean you're getting weaker. That just means that you're actually getting stronger, but you're feeling how weak you are. Does that mean you should stop going to the gym? No, of course not. That means that you can get stronger. And the same thing happens with creatives, is when we are creating and we're feeling down on ourselves, we're feeling not as good as other people, that's the weakness talking. And that's because we are working out. And when we get past that, then we will see that we're able to lift, you know, that 20 pound weight, whatever it is, you know, do those pushups. We're able to see the efforts of our work later on. So when you're feeling discouraged, remember that's the growth. You're feeling the growth. I'm gonna get off my soapbox now.
No, you had me at stupid. Honestly, dude, this is one of the reasons why I do this show. I really love picking the brain of people, and I wish more people would not be afraid, like yourself, to just throw an idea or a passion out there. A lot of guests are very guarded, you know, because on the internet, you'd be so careful what you say, because people always take any statement as, what do you mean that? What do you mean by, well, you can take it as whatever you like. I'm putting it out there in my version, but well, you put it out here for us. It's beating us down. It's badgering us. It's uplifting us. Just one of a million people that's just going, I'm on the internet, blah. You know, did I mean blah? Well, maybe not. Maybe in the, like, you know, come on, calm down. But I can also understand why so many people get upset on the internet, because the internet and statements that are out there have power. You read something on Twitter and someone makes a bold statement and a whole bunch of people react to it negative, positively. That's a powerful thing. Mm-hmm. Like you were talking about music. I believe that not just like all this toxic or friendly or uplifting or community or wow, there's people out there like me and I'll never meet them, but I'm feeling what they're saying and that makes me feel better. Thank you, Twitter. You know, tweet, tweet, tweet. I think we have a responsibility with our content, because there's no way people are just going to go, oh, they're just doing that for a laugh. You're expressing yourself. And even if it's a trope, even if it's a gag, even if it's not the real you, people can't help to think that's what you're like. That's what this content means. That's what it's there for. And it's like, no, we were just really drunk. You know, I'm sorry what I said while I was gaming. You know, my wife has a T-shirt that says, "I'm sorry what I said when I was gaming."
That's hilarious.
For what I said, you know, that type of thing.
Totally.
Anyway, I digress. We're out of time, and you know what? I'm not even gonna go with the rest of the questions. Save one. You know, I find that people, gamers, come from all walks of life, and I'm always curious. Lawyers, doctors, ditch diggers, garbagemen, doesn't matter. What do you do for a living?
So right now I am a music production teacher. I teach technology, and I think the reason I like doing that is that I like to see other people gaining the benefits of the technology that I've been able to use and utilize. And I really like seeing wow moments. I like to show them something and them to say, this is going to make my life so much easier. that kind of interaction and that kind of connection drives me and drives my work. So that's what I do. I'm essentially a trainer. I'm a teacher, and I teach strangers technology, and it's been very, very good to me. Do I want to do this full time? Abso-freaking-lutely. You know, like, absolutely. Do I want to write RPG music all the time? Yes, I do. But
well, where can people find you? I guess is the really good follow-up question. Where can we find you on social media, for starters?
So I am on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. Obviously, that's where you found me. I am just started a TikTok, which has been really fun, surprisingly fun, actually. I do just a bunch of like funny dungeon mastery type skits on there. So if you like D&D content, there's a lot of really great RPG creators on TikTok right now that are just hilarious. They're a complete riot.
Is this all under Arcane Anthem?
Yep, banner? all under Arcane Anthems. Okay. But first and foremost, find me on Patreon. That's where all my music is going to be up. That's where you can go and download the music, download the tunes. Even if you don't support, like you don't become a patron, still there's a little follow button on there. And that way you'll still get updates about things that I'm doing, and you'll know when the latest anthems come out. Shoot me a message. I'm always willing to chat. I love to talk to people about, you know, nerdy stuff and about what they're doing and what they're passionate about and collaborating. That's something that I got into this. I got into music because I love to connect and create relationships. That's really why. So find me all around the internet. I would love to say hello.
Well, you see, your teacher, and sir, I have to admit, I am humbled. You've certainly taught us a lot today. We've been speaking with Weston from, he's a co-DM and player, and probably has something, I bet, something to do with the music and technical involved in Knights of the Roll Table, and a composer under the brand name of Arcane Anthems. Weston, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I think we'll just leave off with a little bit more of that Revive Anthem Brave, because I just think it's awesome.
Dun, 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 dun.